and welcome back to another episode of Masked Monologues. I am so excited to have Paul Pape here with us today, and I've heard that he's delved into endeavors with Nickelodeon, Disney. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do, how long you've been doing it for, and why you started?
Yeah, hi there, and thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it. My name is Paul Pape, and I am a designer and fabricator of custom collectibles. My wife would say that I make memories tangible. And what that basically means is people have requests for things. They don't know where to get it or have it made, and they just basically find me and I make it for them. I like to say that I'm Santa Claus for nerds, because I find that's one that's a little bit easier for people to understand.
Yes.
And yeah, I've had the opportunity. I've been doing it for about 20 years now, and I've had the opportunity to work with companies like Disney and Universal, Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon and other places. And it basically stemmed from a love of making things when I was a kid. And then I found the world of theater when I was in high school. And then from there, I got into design. And so I was designing a lot for theater for probably about 8 years. And then by a fluke, I had somebody ask me if I could make a couple figurines for them. They put them online before there really was an online, and it went viral. And the rest is kind of history. I got a lot of work from that, and I've just kept going with it to see what new challenges people could present.
Wow, that's very interesting. I'm wondering, all these collectible pieces, do you manufacture them yourself or do you outsource them?
I make everything in-house. I started off with sculpting just like by hand. I'm actually playing with some clay right now. But I do woodworking, metalworking. I have 3D printers, lasers, the gamut. And yeah, I'm a one-man production studio.
Wow, that's amazing. May I ask your customers, are they usually individuals or do they tend to be more companies, corporations that you work with and just make duplicates of the same product, or do you do specializations?
Everything that I make is customized. There's nothing that I really make that is mass produced on large scale. I do what's called short runs, like 100 pieces or less is typically what I do. The customers that I work for it started out with just people. I've worked for thousands of people around the world, and I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of corporations. And typically when they hire me, it's usually for something that's very special, unique, and not going to be mass produced. Because I am a studio by myself, the things that they're looking for usually are used for promotional items, for like movies or television, stuff like that. Or I'll do like specialty props for a movie or television. And then as far as products go, it just really depends on what they're after. I work very fast as well. So I'm used to a very tight deadline. So I get a lot of opportunities to work with people and companies when they're like, oh, we're under a really tight deadline. Can you make this weird thing happen in a short amount of time? And that's typically what I'm hired for.
Yes. And may I ask, is it just yourself in the company or do you have employees who work with you?
I've had assistants throughout the years. Typically what happens is I bring people in because they're interested in this as a career. And so I train them up and they assist for a while and then they go off and do their own thing. But for the most part, it's just me.
Oh, and can you tell me just like the process of starting your company? Because I know you said that you just put it online before online became a thing. Can you tell me, do you have a website currently? And what do you do on like the marketing and the promotion aspect of it?
Yeah, I started off, originally I had created a product called Pop Out Furniture, and it was laser die cut model furniture for like dollhouses, architectural models, and theatrical models. And so that was my big online debut. And then from there, I divulged it into just myself. So I'm Paul Pape Designs everywhere online. And so I've been using social media basically since it began to advertise myself. I do a lot of blog posts and videos on YouTube and such. And then just use word of mouth has been like the biggest part of it. I find that when you put your soul into pieces, you have a tendency to attract people. They see the joy in it. And for the most part, I would say that all of the advertising that I do, I've tried actually advertising and such, but when your business model is I can make you anything you want, it's really hard for people to understand what that is. I've done trade shows where I've had the same thing, big banner that says anything that you want made, I can make. And it just confuses people. They until they have a particular thing in mind, it's really hard for them to grasp anything. And so, yeah, it's mostly word of mouth. Or if I find that I do a lot of custom ring boxes, custom wedding cake toppers and gifts. And what I found is that people find themselves doom scrolling late at night, always last minute for some kind of gift or proposal or whatever. And they're like, hey, This is really interesting. I really like this style. Like, I just finished a WALL-E ring box from the movie WALL-E. And it's because that was the movie that they watched on their first date. And so he's finally proposed and he just looked up WALL-E ring boxes. And then there I am just sitting online. Yes. So that's pretty much how people find me.
And you say that you've worked with people all around the world. So it's not as local as I would originally expect. It's mostly online then.
Yeah, I live in Nebraska, and I have been doing this, like I said, for 20 years, and I can count on my hands how many jobs I've done in Nebraska. But I've done thousands of custom pieces. Most of my clients, and it really depends, it's seasonal, it goes in waves. I don't want to say seasonal, like fall, winter, and spring, but seasonal isn't by years. Where I've become popular. Like right now, I'm really popular in Brazil for some reason. And I don't know if it's that they just found me, but that's where it is. But I've shipped to over 40 countries now. Most of the work that I do is online. So if they find me, as long as we can get over the language barrier, which, thank goodness for Google Translate, I have the ability to talk with pretty much anybody in the world. And as long as we can come to agreement on what we're looking for, I have no problem.
And just considering that all your pieces are so customized, is there difficulty with communication, as you were saying, because there is that language barrier? Do people have this vision in their mind, and how do you bring that vision into fruition as a collectible?
It can be difficult sometimes. The great thing is visuals go a long way. I'm really good at doing rapid prototyping, so creating the idea and basically creating mock-ups of it is really easy for me. So if we're having a hard time like locking it down, it's not as difficult because I can show them iterations and they're like, oh yeah, that's what I like. That's what I don't like. I think the hardest one is when we get into the really custom work that isn't based on a pre-existing property. It's not like Harry Potter or Star Wars where we know what the thing is, but we're working on something that is completely imaginary. They're making it up and I'm helping them realize. That's when we can run into some issues. But I find that it all comes down to visuals. If they can see it, I think most people can visualize it from 2D on the screen to 3D in their hands. And I think that's been the most useful thing for me.
And I'm just going to refer quickly back to my experiences working with people online, internationally. Sometimes it can be a prolonged process where you send an email one day and then it takes somebody maybe 5-6 a week to reply. Do you ever get that an order takes longer than it should because the person isn't responding, something's happening, they've got their lives going on, and how do you overcome that?
Yeah, I find that when by the time people find me, when they find Santa Claus, they don't want to let Santa Claus go. I haven't had a lot of, I have had a couple jobs that where I've been like, because you require a deposit to start working on a major project. And I have a couple projects that are actually still sitting here that years ago, they're like, yeah, they put the down payment on. I started it and I started communication and then they just disappeared. And I assume it's just life got in the way or they've forgotten. Whatnot. But as far as like communication back and forth, I think the biggest hurdle that I have is replying in the same thread. Since a lot of it is custom work, I find that I use Gmail a lot and just to reply within thread helps me to communicate and keep all of the information lined up. But sometimes they'll just create a new email. And I've had clients send over 100 separate emails and then they're like, you forgot one little detail. And I'm like, where was it's in one of the 100 emails that you sent? So that's been probably the biggest hurdle.
Inboxes always are chaotic. You don't know where everything is.
That's right. Absolutely. And nobody uses their name anymore. Everybody's got a handle. And when you're trying to find them, I'm like, what's your random email address so that I can try and find all the very, and they'll reply with 3 or 4 different email addresses. Yeah. Like, I don't know who you are. Yeah.
No. And I'm just wondering, since you've been doing this for 20 years, did it start out as a side hustle and then transition into your primary business? Or walk me through the process, how long it took to actually acquire those customers and get your brand, your company out there?
That's actually a really funny story. I was living in LA with my wife. We were she's a costume designer and I was a scenic designer. And we were both trying to make it in the movie industry. And after about a little under a year, my wife decided she hated Los Angeles, just hated it. And so she's, I'd rather move back and be closer to my family, which is how we ended up back in Nebraska. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess I can do whatever, wherever. And I got back here and she was working as a professor at a university here in my city. And then it just so happened that different university here needed a scenic design professor. And I didn't even apply for the job. They just offered it to me. They were desperate. And so I took it and I was there for 3 years. And I love education. That's always been a big thing for me. Little backstory on me. I used school as an escape from an abusive childhood. I threw myself into education. And so education has been a huge part of my life. And so I was like, oh, the opportunity to be a teacher is going to be great. And so I went there, but it's a lot like the Wizard of Oz. If you see behind the curtain, it loses its magic. And so what happened, it was in my third year is when the person asked me if I could make that figurine for them. He was actually a student of mine. And so what happened is once he put it online and it started to go viral, I started getting requests. The figures that I made were Miis from the Nintendo Wii. And since you could customize them to make them look like you, I just got a lot. And the Wii was really big at the time and nobody was making these figures. So I was like, yeah, sure. So I started getting a lot of requests for it. And I ended up getting so many requests. I was making more on the side than I was teaching. And I really loved the sculpting. And so I asked my wife if I could quit teaching to go and try and do this full time. And she said, I'll give you 1 year. And then within the first 4 months, I had another, I guess, brilliant idea or smart, whatever. It went viral. And we made $50,000 in 3 weeks. And she's okay. It looks, you know what you're doing. And so from there, it was really just about marketing myself. I've had lots of different business names, but the one that's stuck the most is Pulpape Designs because it's a verb and a noun. I do design it and it's my business. And then it just became about putting the images of the things that I made out online to really generate the buzz for it. Like my name, the weird, cool thing about my business is I'm paid to be invisible. I'm paid to not have an artist's signature.
Yes.
And so companies hire me because they know I'll match their intellectual property, their IP, or people will hire me because they want to be a part of some kind of IP like Star Wars or Harry Potter. They want that thing that looks like it came directly from whatever that is. And so for me, the advertising really came down to putting the pictures out. And I'm like, hey, I made this sorting hat. I made this piece here. I made people frozen in carbonite so you can have yourself frozen. And those images really started taking off. And then Pinterest became a thing. And really what it was is just people started sharing these images. I think if you go and Google on YouTube any of the top 10 most creative ring boxes, I'm probably 7 of the 10 on every list.
Yes. No, that's wonderful. Just growing, finding like a little gap in the market and filling it, just growing and expanding from there. I'm wondering for entrepreneurs who are just starting out, what would be pieces of advice that you'd give them?
Biggest piece of advice I can give anybody who wants to go into any kind of creative field is to embrace failing. I tell people fail creatively. And the reason is because we don't really learn when we do things correctly. And we don't really expand ourselves by staying in our lane. It's only when you push yourselves into places where you're uncomfortable that you actually learn and grow. And the biggest boon to my business is not doing the same thing over and over again. It's whenever there's in improv, there's this rule called yes. And what that means is you never answer with no because it kills the conversation. You always say yes. No matter how ridiculous the request is. And that's really what I've done with the business. So anybody who's starting out, even if you've created a product and you're really trying to market this thing, this little baby that you created, the idea is never turn down the opportunity. When somebody says, this might be really great for this, or, and it's not what you think it should be, don't ever turn it down because you would be really surprised like how things, like what avenues you won't necessarily think of were more prosperous. And so always be prepared to put yourself out there and be willing to fail, because in that failure, you always learn and there's always nuggets of wisdom inside of it. And I've worked with some, because I do rapid prototyping, I've worked with some people who were trying to get a new business idea off the ground. And what I find a lot of times is that they have this brilliant idea that works for them, because innovation is the, or not innovation, it's a necessity is the mother of invention. And it's usually because this person, an individual, needs something and they want to make a product to help themselves. And then they want to take that, put it out into the world to hopefully mass produce it and make millions of dollars. And what I find happens is that they lose themselves and they'll throw more money and at the problem trying to make something happen. Whereas if you listen to what the market's telling you, what your audience is telling you, like what the world is telling you, you'll find that even though the thing may not be what you thought it would be, if you bent just a little bit instead of being so rigid, you'll advance a lot further.
No, that's a wonderful piece of advice. I've interviewed a ton of creatives before, and it's so interesting to see how there's this disconnect between what they perceived would blow up or would get a lot of attraction versus what actually does. And it's funny, once we're creating something, it's slightly selfish because it's for us, it's what we would want. And sometimes we neglect to consider what our audience would like. And just relating this back to your customization, you said that you create whatever the customer wants. Have you noticed that it's been a little bit difficult to define yourself in a niche market, or have you found a way around that?
I think it comes back to that improv thing. As far as I am about as niche as you get, I don't have a product line. I just make things. As far as niche goes, I don't think you can narrow it down any further than that. I think that the biggest challenge that I run into with that isn't necessarily that people don't know what they want. Sometimes they'll come to me with an idea, like they have a property that they're interested in, something like that, but they're not 100% sure where to go. What's nice for me is I like to listen. Normally when you do an exploratory with a new customer, they tell you the story behind it. And this is why my wife says I make memories tangible, because typically what happens, they start to tell me about something, either it's something that's going to happen or something that has happened. And they tell me the backstory or like their real core behind it. And then even if they had something in mind, I always ask them, are you willing to take suggestions or can I put my two cents in, because I've been doing this longer.
Yes.
And typically what happens is that either they're very rigid, nope, this is exactly what I want, and I'm like, okay, that's fine, and I'll do that for them. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times I'm like, I think that's a great idea. I think it's a great place to start, but from an artistic view, why don't we think about this? And a lot of times the response is, I never thought of that. And but they love the idea. And I'm working on a custom Mandalorian for a client. He wants to be a Mandalorian. And then so I sculpted the piece. And I put the blaster in his hand. And then we found out in the conversation that the guy's actually not a big fan of guns. He's a big fan of swords.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, well, then let's go in and instead we'll get rid of the blaster. We'll put some swords in his hands. And I wouldn't have thought to ask that until I saw it and I didn't know what was capable. And so it really just comes down to the customer and then just having dialogue. It's like listening to truly understand where they're coming from and then always approaching them from a place of understanding and passion for what they're interested in, not just what I'm interested in.
Yes. And with that, I just want to ask, what has been the most intricate piece that you've designed?
It goes all over the place. I've done singing, dancing robots for the Tonight Show.
Wow.
But which was complicated because they also have really tight deadlines. I'm not a robot builder. I was in that instance, but that's not where my background is. So that would say that would probably be one of them. But as far as for an individual client, one of them wanted to propose, but that he had 15 different ideas of all these things that really meant a lot to the both of them. Mm-hmm. And he was trying to figure out how to incorporate it all. And so instead of making basically like a mess of different ideas in one piece, what I did is I created a puzzle box. So it started with a turntable. So as you spun the record on the turntable, a little compartment opened up and inside of it was some DVDs from a movie they loved. And then you pulled that out and it opened another compartment and there was a hidden key. And it just had all of these intricate parts, but it was in a tiny little box. And then eventually at the very end, it popped open and there was a little Lego of each of them. And they were holding the ring out and it was for a proposal. And so just trying to figure out how to incorporate a lot of different ideas into a very small container. That ended up really complicated, but it was a lot of fun because it's not something I do every day.
And I'm just inquiring about the robot. Did you have to work with any engineers or people who had a background in robotics to create that?
Like I said, I love my education, so I have a dangerous amount of knowledge in a lot of things, but I did end up bringing a friend in who does coding all the time.
Yes.
And so I was able to bring him in because he writes coding like I speak English. He's very fluent in it. And while
I know some of those people.
Yeah. And so I can do it, but it's like high school French. It's like, it's not, it gets the job done, but it's not elegant. And so I brought him in to help me with the coding aspect of it. But what we had to do is especially with the Tonight Show, you can't use anything that looks like a product that exists because of copyright infringement. Mm-hmm. So they can get sued or they have to pay the company on the thing that it looks like. And so with the robot, it had to be completely original. Mm-hmm. So from the body shape and the how it moved and all of that. And so the real challenge in that one was designing it in a way that looked aesthetically pleasing and matched what they were looking for, but then mm-hmm. also did everything mechanical that they wanted under a tight deadline. And so the robot looked really pretty on the outside, but on the mm-hmm. inside, it was a hot mess of just trying to put it all together. Mm-hmm. And so fortunately for him, bringing in that expert with the coding, it saved me hours and hours, which I really didn't even have. So that worked out well.
Yeah. No, I love your entire story. Sometimes you have this front that, you know, looks like everything is running smoothly, everything is doing just great, but on the inside, it's just a chaotic environment. You're like, what's going on? What's this? I don't know what's happening. No, thank you so much. I would like to wrap up this episode now. So if you want to shout out to, you've done it a little bit throughout the entire episode, but your website, just social media platforms, and where people can find you if they want to order a custom piece.
Yeah, you can find me anywhere. It's Paul Pape Designs. It's like paper without the R. So Paul Pape Designs. I'm everywhere on social medias under that. I also speak on how to learn how to do all of this. I have another website, which is my speaking, coaching, and consulting business, which is paulpape.it. So you can Paul Pape it. And if you have an idea and you don't know how to have it come to fruition, send me an email. Can't make it for you if I can at least get you in the right direction.
No, that's so catchy. Paul Pape it.
Yep.
Thank you so much. And if you listeners like this episode of Mass Monologues and you'd like another episode, please share it with a friend or family member. And we hope to see you next time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Baby, how do you know?